Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for the week of July 31st, and with me on a gloomy, muggy Sunday morning is Jim Allen. What's happening, buddy?
Well, I'm not gloomy, neither gloomy nor muggy, but I'm here. I'm hanging in here early in the morning. John's got some funky hours, let me tell you, and he's dragging me down into his depths of his schedule.
Oh, no.
But you know, it's all for the team, baby.
Funky hours. I was.
Yeah, Marty. I'm a vampire, man. No.
I'd say the ones whose hours need a good washing are yours.
Okay. Okay. Well, that's possible. That's possible, but my body is not forgiving. I'm forgiving, but my body is not.
All right. Well, it's good to see you. Yesterday on this week's show, we have a chat with Scott Matheson of the Giants, and Jim and I were both out there on Saturday at Tokyo Dome to talk to him. And we're going to do mini tracks together, and we're going to talk about a whole lot more. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases.
Okay. As John said, I was out at the aforementioned Tokyo Dome and speaking to Giants reliever Scott Matheson, which is always a real pleasure. Scott's about the straightest shooter I could find, or I think you're going to find. And it was really a pleasure. And so we talked for quite a bit, of which some got caught on the recording device. So no worries about that. So anyway, I had a pile of questions for him. John sent me a question, but it just got, I didn't see it until after. In fact, I didn't see it till this morning. So
this morning?
Yeah, that's when I noticed it.
Oh no.
Yeah.
I sent that days ago.
Did you?
Hashtag high heat.
Yeah, well, you see, it was right before the notes. There's a big block on my text, and I look at the one with all the graphics.
All right. Well, I know where I stand.
Okay, our guest this week on the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast is Scott Matheson. It's been a while, man.
It has. Thanks for having me back on.
Oh, it's always a pleasure. First of all, yeah, congratulations. You had a big week last week against the Bay Stars. What's this, six batters, six strikeouts, and making it look easy?
Yeah, I mean, of course it's never easy. They have a good lineup, but, you know, part of it's luck, and, you know, I was feeling good too, so it just all came together.
Yeah, it's always, I think, you know, one of the things we like to see about baseball is really unusual good things.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it makes it fun, and, you know, baseball's, there's always something new and, you know, something unusual. Seems like it happens every week here, so
yeah,
it makes it a lot of fun.
Well, I mean, obviously some of the unusual things we had this year, like 13 games, was it 14?
13.
13, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that was a tough streak, but, you know, I guess it could be worse. You look at the Swallows and they had, you know, 10-plus game losing streaks.
Yeah, so
and
indeed.
We've been playing well lately, so.
Yeah, so let me ask about the losing streak. What, other than just the losses themselves, was there anything that was perhaps really disappointing to you?
I mean, you know, I think falling behind, you know, falling out of a playoff spot and falling back definitely is disappointing. And, you know, in interleague where it's a chance to play some teams we don't see much, and, you know, having almost everybody, you know, had a rough game, or when we'd have a good game, it just wouldn't be enough. And it was a... It was one of those things where, you know, we lost a few games, but then I felt like, you know, we had some bad luck on our side, and, you know, we could have won a bunch of those games, but it just fell the other way.
You've been playing baseball for a long time, so you've been in some losing streaks before. So is it different the way teams deal with it in the States than in Japan?
No, I mean, I think, you know, losing's losing wherever you're at, and, you know, it's the same wherever, you know, every team is different, but, you know, I felt like our coaches and everybody dealt with it pretty well here and, you know, stayed positive and really encouraged everybody instead of getting, you know, frustrated and getting down. And, you know, you saw what happened afterwards. We went and won, I think, four or five series in a row right after that losing streak. So, you know, that was nice. And it was nice that, you know, it wasn't a huge panic button or, you know, it wasn't a lot of criticism. It was more positivity and, It was nice to see that.
Certainly the people in uniform, everybody was pulling together.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it brought the team closer together. And, you know, our team is a pretty close-knit team, and a lot of us have been together for, you know, quite a while. For me, 6 years I've been here and been with a lot of the same guys. And, you know, it's, you know, a lot of good guys on the team, and everybody kind of gets along. And, you know, even in that losing streak, we had a couple times where everybody went out to dinner and we got together and, you know, said we're going to win as a team, we're going to lose as a team. And, you know, that was, you know, it's nice to be on a team like that where it's not a lot of individuals, it's still a team.
Oh, okay. Well, now one of the things I noticed is that in the off season, you bring your teammates are always coming over. It's like Scott's hostel over there. It's in Florida.
Yeah, I live in Florida, and you know, last 2 years I've had teammates come visit, and you know, last year I had seven guys from Japan come out and visit, and you know, we had a lot of fun, and I think just being able to you know, share, you know, my workout off-season training with them, and then also, you know, have some fun on the side. And, you know, I've had a great time every time, you know, guys come over, and, you know, hopefully it continues.
Hunting and fishing and blowing stuff up.
Yeah, hunting, fishing, blowing stuff up, you know, riding four-wheelers and doing stuff that over here I think, you know, is not really the norm. And, you know, we had a lot of fun with it, and, you know, still being able to train and work out pretty hard.
So where did the...
You know, you're here to succeed, and when you don't succeed, let's find out why you didn't, and, you know, make it better. So they're always pushing you to be better than yourself. And you know, for me, it's something that I loved. And you know, if I have a bad game, it's someone sits down and talks to me about it and say, why do we do this, what did I do wrong, and I'm able to learn from it. And so I think the coaches helped me a lot. I think growing up in Canada and just the hockey mentality and being, you know, able to listen and, you know, absorb the new culture and everything helped me a lot here. And I try to tell everybody that, you know, when you come over here with an open mind, and don't come over here very closed-minded saying, I got here for a reason. Say, like, I'm coming here to get better. And, you know, if it's to stay here, if it's to go home, or whatever your goal is, you know, try to, you know, find the positive in every situation.
Well, let me ask, it hadn't occurred to me, but obviously being a Canadian, when you started playing baseball in America, did you find any kind of a culture gap there, dealing with Americans, baseball players instead of Canadians?
Yes, definitely. I don't want to, you know,
no, right.
Bite myself in the butt here, but or offend anybody, but I definitely, you know, I think just the way I looked at the game was a lot different than, you know, I looked at it at a great opportunity. When I first got into pro ball, I was only making $800 a month,
right?
And after taxes, I was barely able to survive.
Sure.
But I looked at it as, wow, I'm getting paid to play baseball, where
okay.
Before I had to pay to play.
Right.
And I felt like a lot of guys I played with would complain that they're only getting paid $800, or, you know, it was just that mentality where I was very, you know, fortunate and thankful for my opportunity, and I try to make the most of it, where I feel like some guys' expectations are almost, you know, expected, and, you know, I felt that was a big difference.
Interesting. I said it never occurred to me, because, you know, like most Americans, I think of Canada as you know, being like us.
Yeah, just younger brother, right?
I don't know what, cousins,
yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Cousins living next door.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, well, thanks very much for joining us. It was a pleasure.
Oh, anytime.
Okay.
Okay, well, thanks a lot, Scott. I appreciate it. It's good to have you back on the show.
Thank you much, Scott. Good seeing you yesterday, too.
And tell me, Mr. Gibson, what would you like to comment about?
Well, we should tell the listeners what happened. And you hear that part of the conversation seems to be spliced together. And I was at Tokyo Dome with Jim, but I was going to do another interview, and I had to rush home. So I called Jim, and Jim was in the midst of talking to Scott. And because he was using his iPhone to record, the app that I called on cut off the interview. But Jim noticed,
yeah,
part of the
it's
way
a new
went.
And it's a new it's yeah it's a new iPhone, and so the recording color changed, you know, and I didn't know, and I've had cases where I record over things.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm glad I got the start.
Yep.
So I don't know whether I, you know, it was me or, but anyway, I should have learned my lesson years ago, which is when you use your iPhone to record an interview, you set it on airplane mode, so airline pilots and people calling don't bother you.
Right. So we missed a couple of questions and a couple of answers, and I'll fill you in because I was there to listen to the part that we missed. And Jim asked about Scott's physical fitness, and Scott talked about how His father said, "Hey, when I was young, he said, don't have any regrets." And so he works out really hard, and he holds a few records with the Phillies organization, he said, because physical fitness records, I guess they do a lot of testing on strengths and
they have different fitness tests, and he said he set some records with the Phillies, and he holds a bunch of Giants records as well. Because, you know, I noticed that because in the offseason, his on Twitter, basically it shows him doing his 4 a.m. workouts and,
5 a.m.
you know, leaping tall buildings and tall buildings in a single bound, you know, carrying, you know, like three times his body weight, and it's really yeah. quite impressive.
Yeah, he talked about how he gets up every day at 5 a.m. and he gets to the gym and he works out 6 days a week, and he talked about how he had surgery. I don't know if it was an arm or elbow, shoulder.
No, but he said he was 22. He'd just been in, had his major league debut. And it was at that point that he thought, you know, whenever this ends, I don't want to have, you know, my dad said, don't have any regrets. So.
Right.
And we got into that because we were talking about his, you know, I was talking about his little boot camp he runs for Giants. Well, it's sort of a boot camp and adventure world he runs for Giants players,
right?
In the off season in Florida.
And that's where the interview spliced back in, so you guys were able to hear that. And then Jim had also asked before that his biggest influence on his career in Japan, and he said it was the coaches, the coaching. And he said that there were a lot of hands-on work with the coaches that you normally don't get. And I thought about that because it's the same in our field of work, is where you come in and you're expected to be able to produce right away. And there's not a lot of time to take guys aside and teach and say, okay, this was what was good about your story, and this is what we'd like to see you improve on or do better. And, you know, it's the same now, although it's for editing. You know, we just got to get the paper out, and we don't have time to sit the editors that we bring on, who we bring on, and set them aside and say, hey, this would be better if you could notice these things, notice this way that this is written, and let's keep it this way. You know, we just don't have time, but it's good to hear that the Giants have taken the time to pull him aside, and he talked about his successes, his failures, and say, okay, this is what we did really good. If he has a bad outing, let's try to do this better. Let's try to make this adjustment. So I really like that. But getting to the interview itself, and you said Scott's a straight shooter, and we heard a more humble Scott than we've heard on past JBW episodes, I think. Although he didn't hesitate to mention, no matter how bad things were going for the Giants, that they didn't suffer two double-digit losing streaks like the Swallows had. So he still has that.
he still got that on the field. You know, I got those guys. You know, and well, I mean, I shouldn't say that's not quite. It's not accurate. I'm trying to characterize it. But it's a. You know, not afraid of anybody on the field. We're better than. But I guess when John talks about bravado, you know, the way he talks, there's a bit of confidence that nobody's as good as us.
Right.
Nobody's as good as we are, and that has been the tendency. I think, I don't know, humble is the word, but I guess more perspective. Of course, part of that perspective is in the first 3 years he was here, the Giants were ruling the Central League with an iron fist.
Right.
And then only got beat up in the Japan series in 2013. And that was a huge, you know, that was almost, it seemed to him at that time, or it sounded to him and some of the other Giants as if it was an aberration that a Pacific League team could beat them. And that's gone.
Yeah.
I think that realization that the Giants aren't, you know, the destiny forever, you know, it catches up to you. And I don't think it was 13. I think it's just, you know, you play long enough and you see enough. You get a better perspective wherever you are, because obviously he came out from outside of Japan and he came onto this team that was, you know, with Abe and his, towards the end of his prime, or slightly past his prime, and Sakamoto, you know, really just picking it up, and Chona still playing like crazy. And it seemed like a team that just couldn't be beat. and to be beaten was sort of like beyond comprehension.
Right.
So I think that's gone. You know, that the Giants are a human team, and that they're not all, you know, it's not all the best players in Japan that all play for the Giants. I think that's part of it.
Right. And so that's
the
that's
other thing.
Yeah, that's why I said a little bit more humble. But yeah, go ahead. The other thing.
I think the other thing that was really interesting to me was the bit about how well the team stayed together.
Oh, you know what I thought you were going to focus on?
What?
I thought you were going to focus on the way that he, you know, his approach that he took coming here was the mindset of this is, NPP is a way for me to improve. Not. I thought that's exactly where you're going to go first.
I'm okay.
I'm shocked that you went to the team.
Well, that's I was moving on to a similar topic. I was sort of moving on to the next similar topic, which was the Giants. But I was thinking about you know, when he talked about the losing streak, and you know, and how that affected or his impression of that, and I thought about his normally. With the Giants, what we hear in the past is just how good they are. But in this time, we got a sort of a personal look into the atmosphere within the team. Mm. And I say that, and I pointedly said the players in uniform, the people in uniform, because during the losing streak, the front office was going crazy and publicly, you know, apologizing as we alluded to a few weeks back.
Right.
You know, complaining about you know, people canceling subscriptions, and they were changing players like crazy, and it was a little bit like a, you know, purges were going on. But to me, it was interesting that the people in uniform, even the front office going crazy and panicking, probably brought the team closer together as much as the losing streak.
I was surprised to hear that they all went out to dinner like twice. You know, like one time it seemed, you know, we hear about player or team player meetings or team meetings in the States, and I suppose I've never really heard about it here in Japan. Maybe it happens. Maybe the media just doesn't know about it and we don't report about it, but to have them go out to dinner twice during this, and when you're on the road, I guess it's easy. You get some of the older guys and the leadership and they get together. But remember, I complained about the leadership with the management or on in the dugout, and I forgot about like I said, I think I said before, Shinosuke Abe is past his prime, so I don't know that he can be a leader or the leader. But I think there can be a leadership group, and obviously Scott would be part of that leadership group as veterans. I think Sakamoto could be part of that group. Even Yoshiyuki Kame could be part of that group. And so, that was good to hear. That was interesting to hear that those guys went out and talked about it and said, well, we're going to stick together and fight through it. And I think Scott has a little bit of a selective memory in terms of how they did coming after that streak, because they broke the skid, but they lost that series. They lost the next two games, and then they actually lost a couple more. And it wasn't until July here that they actually started winning four or five series or something like that. It wasn't quite the way he remembered it, but that's good. I mean, that was dark time.
but having a dark time when it turned the lights out. I reckon. Yeah, it went from pitch black.
I can see.
I guess what do you call dusk? Yeah, indeed. But you know, I think the question, we had talked to Scott and I had talked about this before earlier this year, and about how he had improved. And I have the scout. Every scout I talk to, every major league front office guy I talk to who's scouted in Japan, you know, there's a huge conversation about how come these guys, these the Colby Lewis and Ryan Vogelsong and Scott Atchisons who come over here and they've completely fallen off the radar. They come over here and then they remake their careers and they go back to the majors and they've suddenly they're locked in and valuable.
Yep. Yeah.
So
why?
You know, what is it that makes that possible? And there's I've heard a half dozen answers why that is, and I thought his answer was if not quite unique, but an interesting spin on it, which was And something I think is true, which is if, and people have told me this, that if you are, the number one thing is if you're willing to take what lessons there are here, mm-hmm. you can learn a lot, which is not, I think, dissimilar from anywhere in the States, but his on top of that is the fact that they are actually teaching, they are ready to teach you, which at these players, the stage of these players, how can I say this? The stage of the careers of the players coming here, they're not in a situation in America or overseas where people are teaching them. They're just waiting for them to either succeed or fail.
Right.
And that's extreme. That's extreme because they are still, of course, there are still pitching coaches giving advice here and there. But the focus then is on you do it or you go back to AAA or you succeed and go to the majors or you don't.
Right.
And here it was, you need to do this, you need to do that, this is what we need. And his attitude was, well, if you think you're here and you're good enough, you're not going to learn anything.
Right. And I love that aspect. I love that aspect of, especially to hear it with the Giants, that they're willing to have some patience and talk things out instead of just, you know, it just always sounds like a guy gets shipped out to the minors for no reason. Obviously, there's some reasons in house that the coaches are not are not satisfied with the effort or the attitude or something else, and they say, "Hey, look, if you can't learn it up here, you can learn it on the farm." And because we are trying to win games up here.
And I think the flip side to that is that sometimes if you're not receptive to the message, you don't hear it. He got sent down for no reason means he didn't get the reason.
Or we don't
know. I'm not saying that. Yeah. Or, okay, let's put it this way. There are weird decisions. And I've gone through this a lot with Brian Bullington, especially talking about the Carp and Oryx, and he's always trying to defend Oryx, you know, kind of he's trying to fight a rear guard action defending the way because Oryx treated him well, but you know he lets it slide. Sometimes you just can't figure out what they're doing, but the point is I think in his view too, and he has a similar attitude to Scott's, which is if I'm going down there is a reason, it's my job to find it.
Right.
And so, but some players, you know, especially teams with the Carp and some of the other teams that have been more, that are in a more generous mode. I don't think everybody's generous all the time, but are in a patient mode with a player who believe in what he can do more than what he's shown, will sometimes let the player play into it. And teams that are less so will not. But again, there is a message there. But if you're, you know, if you're, if you have the attitude that sort of ideal attitude that Scott alluded to, then you're gonna pick up more of the message than the guy who says, "I'm here to win right now, and I don't have to do anything except show up."
Right, right. All right. Well, let's talk about the Giants. They've been showing up recently this month. They've been winning more than they've been losing in general.
Yep.
You know, they started out okay this month. They beat the Carp 2 out of 3, and then they beat the Tigers 2 out of 3, both those series on the road. Mm-hmm. Then they swept the Swallows, but that wasn't fair. That was when the Swallows were in the midst of that skid. And they beat the Dragons 2 out of 3, so everybody's beating the Dragons. So I don't think it was that big a deal. They lost 2 out of 3 to the Carp. So they have been okay. They've been, you know, if they stay on this kind of path, I think they can get back up into the race. And it seemed like, you know, Scott did make a comment. Like,
yes.
We fell out of the playoff spot. Like it was over, you know, and I'm like, no, you know, it's not over.
Mm.
It is difficult.
It sure looked like.
Yeah. But I'm still not going to say that they can't get into that third playoff spot, but it is a challenge. It is definitely a challenge.
Yeah, I don't think we need to declare time of death just yet, as I noticed this morning when I was looking at some numbers. Now, speaking to, you know, doing the fact check on what he said. Now the Giants' losing streak was from May 25th to June 8th.
Okay.
And prior to that, they had scored 145 runs and allowed 142. They had a 23-20 record, mm-hmm. which was about one win more than you could expect, or one could expect, given those runs scored and runs allowed. Okay. Now, during the streak, they scored 29 runs and they were outscored. They allowed 85
during their
and they were 0-13. You know, they could have been expected to have won about one game with those numbers. And then since June 9th, when they came out, they've scored 133 and allowed 115, and they have a 19-15 record, which is exactly what they would be expected to do. So did they play better than they did before the start of the losing streak? And the answer is yes. So, give them a gold star.
Yeah. So they've been on a good path and that's been good. So let's talk. We don't have Patrick Newman here to do Power Tracks this month either. So we will do mini tracks together, you and I. I wanted to start with the teams that have been struggling. So obviously.
Maybe it was Mustard.
And I want to start in the Pacific League, and just the falling fighters is just a story that just can't be ignored. And I went back and looked. I asked you, I think, during the week, but a team going from first to worst. We've seen the worst to first situation happen a few times, but these are the defending Japan Series champions, and they're awful. In fact, they're beyond awful. I think they're going into games now where they're just hoping to compete and maybe have a chance to win at the end, but not expecting to do anything. So the last team that went from first to worst was the Eagles when in 2014. And that was the Mark Kuhn year, the previous year, 2013, when they won it all. They won the Japan Series. And then Masahiro Tanaka, with his record-breaking year, led the way, but he went to the Yankees. And in 2014, the Eagles tumbled all the way to the bottom of the PL. And they doubled up on it by finishing in last place the following year, 2015, under the Dave Let's Run Everywhere Okubo regime. And then there was the 2012 Fighters who did it. They won in what? They won in 2012, and then 2013.
And they were last in 2013.
2013, they were the last place team, and then the Swallows in 1978 won, and then they were last in 1979.
Their first championship. The Swallows' first championship in 1978, Japan Series champions. 1979 finished last place. 1980 Kintetsu Buffaloes.
Who never won
the Japan Series. Now they're gone. They finished last in 1981. And the other team that went from first to worst was the miracle 1960 Taiyo Whales. So they finished first, won the Japan Series. That franchise, now the Bay Stars.
Right.
They've finished. They won two league pennants. They won two Japan Series, and that's that.
And so the Fighters are. They lost on Saturday 4-0. They fall. Mm-hmm. They fell a season worst, tying 25 games under 500. They have been shut out 13 times this season to lead all NPB teams. Although I did see a note that no one pitcher has thrown a shutout against them this year. It's all been a bullpen situation. So they've just been really awful. It's hard.
They're making it hard for teams to shut them out, running up the pitch counts.
Starters to shut them out. But teams are having an easy time shutting them out.
Make them throw more. We're not going to let one guy throw a complete game shutout against us. Right. Put your pride.
So they've been pretty bad. Oryx snapped an 8-game skid on Friday night with a victory over Rakuten. I think that was 11-5. But they generally look like they're not going to be able to make up the ground to climb back into a playoff spot. I think the talent is there. I saw a note somewhere that said Junichi Fukuda, the Buffaloes are thinking about bringing him back next year. And I'm like thinking, no, don't do it. Don't do it.
Yeah, I mean, he's a cork. And I don't mean that in any sort of bad or – I can't draw any connotations, but that he's floating on the level of the team. You know, if it was a good team, he'd look like a good manager. If it's a bad team, he looks like a bad manager. I don't think he really adds or subtracts a lot from this organization.
Yeah, he's
so the question is, why bring him back?
Why?
Yeah, exactly. I don't dislike – I personally, I like him, and – but I don't see him as having any impact on the team.
Yeah, and they're not, you know, they're against Rakuten, they were, as of that day, they were 2-11 and 1 against them. They're just not beating good teams. They're able to beat some, you know, the Marines and the Fighters of the world, but then when they get to teams that they need to compete against to get that playoff spot, they don't do as well. And we've seen that. Although they beat the Eagles now twice, they've beaten them. They beat them on Saturday as well. They stopped the skid on Friday, beat them on Saturday. But they're losing overall against them, so that's not good.
No.
The teams that are doing well in the Pacific League, the battle for first place, and it's a real nice, fun battle to watch. I think it's going to be interesting the whole way. The Eagles, they were one of the better teams in July in the Pacific League. Rick Vandenhurk, Takahiro Norimoto had a really good game the other night against each other. It ended up being a 4-1 win for the Eagles on Wednesday. And the Eagles won. I thought it was a 3-game winning streak, and I tweeted, hey, I'm sorry, I thought it was a 3-game series.
Sorry.
And I tweeted out, hey, the Hawks avoided a sweep in a 3-game series. And Jim said, well, actually, it was only 2 games. They, you know, the first one got rained out. And I'm like, oh, that's right. You know, so it ended up just they split the 2 games. But I already thought the Eagles had won.
Indeed. Well, that was the way it's been. I mean, the Eagles have had things going their way. But I'll tell you, it was a bad week for the Eagles, obviously. And I normally don't think a lot about losing. Now, they lost to Yuki Matsui, which is a real hard thing to take. And the closer, he's out for, I think, 4 weeks. Okay. And then the same game, they lost Toshiaki Mai. Now, normally, I wouldn't really – that, you know, that's not a huge hit. But when everybody's getting hurt, Toshiaki Mai at this stage of his career is a depth guy. You know, he's the guy who can – you know, he can play third base. He can play first base. He can – he won't kill you. You know, he's a veteran. You know, they can – I'm sure the Eagles have guys who are better hitters.
Mm-hmm.
Than him on the farm team, but they haven't been through it, made the adjustments like he has. So it's more of a crapshoot, and they're going to have to give his innings to basically people who have never done this before, or who've been overlooked because they weren't as good, or whatever, or you know, guys who've been through the ringer. Sort of on the negative side,
right?
So that's going to affect him, and he's essentially out for the season. So I think the effect of Imai is, oh my gosh, here's another one.
Yeah, Matsui is supposed to be back next month.
Right, 4 weeks, as I said.
Yeah, not the rest of the season. And then they lost Kazuya Fujita.
That's Imai. Imai is going to be out basically for the rest of the season.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. All right. They lost Kazuya Fujita, but he's supposed to be back soon.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Eiguro Mogi is supposed to be back today on Sunday, so we'll see if he gets back soon.
Oh, is he? Okay, that's...
Carlos Peguero, they said sometime in August he should be back with the hamstring. And then Takeiro Okajima is supposed to be back also sometime in August. But, you know, you say that, but the SoftBank Hawks have played well as well this month. And they've had serious injuries too. Tsuyoshi Wada, we haven't seen him all year,
yeah,
basically.
But,
with the elbow. Wait a minute.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. Ryota Igarashi walked off the mound one day. I was watching that game, and he's out until October, so essentially for the rest of the season and maybe back for the playoffs. Mm. Seiichi Uchikawa broke a finger the other day. Broke a thumb, I think it was. He's not supposed to be back until September. And then Munenori Kawasaki went on he was deactivated because both Achilles were sore. So, I mean, I think both teams are...
Yeah,
that
but that's a huge difference. That's a huge difference between the Hawks and the Eagles.
Definitely, definitely. But they've still been
the
Eagles have still been able to compete. Like I said, they split that series. I had them nearly sweeping the 3-game series when they almost swept a 2-game series. But they're still competing well, and they still look good.
I don't know. It looks like they walked into a door in against Oryx this weekend. So
well, yeah, that can happen. I mean, I don't.
You can.
Yeah, I think we saw some of the effects of the bullpen situation where they gave up some runs late, especially Hiroyuki Nakajima hit the grand slam late in the game, and that put that game out of reach. But you know, that's going to happen. Maybe we're seeing some effects of it, but I think both teams have to deal with that. I actually think the Eagles are deeper than we think. We just haven't seen these guys produce, so we're not used to it. And that bullpen can be scary.
Yeah. I do. You know, I have a lot of confidence in Masa Takanashi's ability to put a team together, but I just know that the difference is. The Eagles, and I said this, they have guys who can play on the farm team. I don't doubt that. But the difference in having guys who can play and guys who are too good to be on the farm.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, absolutely too good to be on the farm. And the Hawks are loaded with a farm team of guys who are too good to be on the farm.
I gotcha.
And it's, you know, I still think, and I still think, that if you took the Hawks, a minor league team, they could compete in the Pacific League and in the Central League, and they probably wouldn't finish last.
Yeah, no doubt. I'm not.
So that's where I'm coming from. So I mean, yeah, the Hawks have had as their injury troubles have probably been worse than the Eagles.
Mm-hmm.
But they just got they just got more resources. They've built more resources into their system than the Eagles have in the last 5 years.
Yeah,
so.
I agree. And a lot of people know, they've been listening to the show for years. The Eagles are one of the teams I really like in the Pacific League. I'm a big fan. I just think the SoftBank Hawks are better. And I have them winning the Pacific League some way, somehow. And I just...
No, I think that's right. I think this is the opening that's going to be, you know, that's going to be the difference in this pennant race is because the Eagles were not going away. But I think eventually, you know, when they're back to using Kazuo Matsu in left field again, as much as I love Kazuo Matsui and I had to write a story about the time when, you know, when he went back to play shortstop for the first time in 2 years and saved a game for him this year.
Yep.
You know, having him in the starting lineup is really not a good idea.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not going to kill you, but he's just not a plus either.
Right. All right, so let's take a look at the Central League. So I want to start again with the team that was struggling because it was so obvious the Swallows – had that 14 game skid.
Yeah.
They finally got out of it, and lo and behold, we said, hey, maybe they'll have some success because the Dragons are coming to town, and they did. They swept the Dragons, including a game in which
you're like a prophet.
What's that?
You're a prophet.
I wish I had a prophet. including a game in which they were down 10-0 and they came back, so they turned this 10 run deficit into a victory. And you know, I was laughing and joking watching the game, thinking, you know, the Dragons are putting Koji Fukutani out there like this is going to help them get out, you know. And I thought, this is not what you have to do. And I guess no lead is safe when he's out there, and he started a fire that nobody could put out, and then you could just see it coming. And it was like, you know, you see a couple runs here, a couple runs. First of all, I thought, and we've talked about it. I talked about it on the show earlier this year, where I think the Dragons are trying to build this year. They're telling their young pitchers, even their older pitchers or their established pitchers, I should say, the game is 9 innings long. Don't look at the dugout when you get to the 7th inning or 8th inning and you're in trouble. And Yudai Ohno had been pitching really well, but he was toasted and he was done. And they sent him out there to throw, and he gave up a couple runs. And, you know, it just got worse and worse. Whatever pitcher they brought out there, and they didn't help themselves by not catching a couple pop flies that probably could have been outs. But, hey, you know, I said it happens. I didn't realize it was, you know, a record-tying deficit that they had overturned. But I think the Dragons could have been up 15 runs. They weren't going to win that game. So it could have been historic.
Wow.
It just could have been historic.
But
it was good for the Swallows. I thought, well, here are two teams, neither one of which is going anywhere. They're trying to fight each other to stay out of the cellar. the games. I think when you have teams like this, and there's something that I've noticed that I wanted to talk to you later on, but I guess I'll say it now. Yeah, I've noticed it more this year. You know how before they started the playoff system, when you get to the second half, you kind of see the eyes of these players of teams that didn't have a shot to finish. I guess since they didn't have a playoff system, they didn't have a shot at the pennant. And you see the eyes of some of these players, and they're having fun, they're enjoying the game, but their heart is not in it, so to speak. They want to get off the field, they want to win, but it's not at all costs. They're not running through walls to do so. And so, consequently, some of the games, they kind of lose some games that they just have trouble closing out, that they could have won them, but they, you know, whatever.
Right.
You know, I'm seeing that this year. And I'm seeing it a lot with the Dragons. I'm seeing it with the Fighters. They're just not able to finish games off maybe that they could win. I saw it a lot with the Marines early on when they were really, really struggling. But I think, I don't know, they have some new juice, so to speak. They've got some new kind of mojo, and they're actually playing a little bit better. Even though it might not show up in the standings, they don't have that look in their eyes. They're still trying to win games. But it looked to me like the Dragons were going through some motions, and they're not doing that little bit extra that might get you over the top. They're playing hard, but you know, I think they realize they're not going to the postseason, and you know, let's get this game over with, and let's not get anybody hurt. And so,
yeah, I think the thing is, I characterize it slightly different, or I see it slightly differently. But I think, you know, when you're down, you go into the game thinking you're going to win. Or thinking, you know, this is going to be your day to win, and you hustle from the start of the game. And then when you start losing, it's like, okay, we'll get them tomorrow. You know, and then when you start winning, it's like, wow, this is fun. Let's keep, you know, let's pile it on. Let's do this. We need to do more of this.
Right.
And the next day you come out, we can do more of this. But the reality is that your team is losing, is your team is not very good. The chances of you could, you know, it's then it sets in to sort of like, you know, save your energy for tomorrow. But, you know, we're not going to win this game because we keep doing it. It's just a human nature thing. I think that a lot of these guys, they fight it. And when they're on the field, they're competing because it's their life is to compete.
And they are competing. I don't want to say anybody's giving up or they're not trying.
But, there's a point at which you pass when it's diminished expectations. I think, as you put it, you didn't put it that way, but I think you were talking about, you know, the point of keeping of playing at a high energy level, and, you know, taking risks.
Right.
And so, they talk about, usually teams, championship teams will almost always say this team never gave up.
Right.
Without exception. Oh, the reason we won the pennant is because, and there's a grain of truth to that, because those were the teams when things, you know, when things could have gone the other way, didn't.
Right.
So, I think it's a molehill being made into a mountain, but I think there's some truth to that.
All right, so basically, the Swallows were able to sweep the Dragons at Jingu, and essentially, they scored 31 runs in the series, but they only needed 23 to win because they gave up a bunch of runs. So, you know, those teams trying to beat each other and stay out of last place, I think that's important to those guys. And they basically exchanged home sweeps, because I think the last time the Dragons played the Swallows at home, they swept them. So in the whole scheme of things, I don't think it was that big a deal, but it seemed to get the Swallows going. They won a game yesterday at Mazda Stadium. They beat the Carp. And
They beat up the Carp pretty good, too.
Yeah, Copa Ballantine is homered in five consecutive games, so he's going.
And Tetsuo Yamada hit a home run off a right-hander, which doesn't happen very often.
Yep.
Wasn't a great right-hander, but
took it right to straightaway center, yeah. A real nice looking stroke. Looked like I wanted to tweet, but I was busy with a baby at the time. But I said, you know, it's like, oh, I know that guy. Didn't you used to be Tetsuo Yamada?
Exactly. He used to be.
Yeah, I've seen.
Well, I mean, earlier in the week during the Dragon series, they won the historic 11-10 comeback. The comeback from 10 to, they were losing 10-0 after six innings.
Mm-hmm.
And they came back and won 11-10 when they when a left-hander walked Tetsuto Yamada with the bases loaded.
Right.
Which was his second bases loaded walk of the game.
Yeah.
And it hadn't occurred to me all year. It hadn't occurred to me at all, really, since, you know, I've talked about how he's really hasn't been the same player since last August when he got hit in the back. But what never occurred to me is that his left-right splits are what has killed him. And he has basically become a mediocre hitter against right-handers. So against right-handers on the road, you know, that's not who, you know, pick a random second baseman off the Giants farm team and that's who you've got. But against lefties at Jingu Stadium, you know, he's still Tetsuto Yamada, you know, with a 1,000+ OPS. So.
Right. Okay. So yeah, anyway, it was a great game. So, it was a great game. Now another team that has struggled has been the Dragons. They've been, and I think, yeah, I called that when I said I think they peaked when they were winning a bunch of games. Actually, without Dion Viciedo, they were really good in terms of winning games. Since he has come back, they haven't been very good. But I don't think it's his fault. I'm not going to blame him. And he's actually been somewhat
productive. No, he's actually played. He's played well since they've. He's hit well since he's come back. So.
Exactly. He's been somewhat productive. So, and then there's the Carp. The Carp have been playing very steadily all season long. There's no problem with them. They're more than 10 games up.
I have a thing about the Carp, and this is a mystery that I can't understand. It's not the Carp. It's there's no team in Japan that destroys left-handed pitching like the Carp. Uh-huh. Okay. The last 3 years, their OPS against left-handed pitching is just absurd. And yet they're not quite the Swallows. The Swallows in the last, this month have seen 10 left-handed starters.
Okay.
And, they're one in six against them. But why have the next in line is the Carp? Why would, you know, In 19 games, why would they see 9 lefties? And I guess it's just the way the rotations work, and there's a lot of lefties in the Central League this year. But
they played the Dragons, and probably they played the Dragons and the Bay Stars a little bit too much, because they have a bunch of lefties.
Yeah, right. Lefty starters. Right, but. Well, they're only 5-4 against left-handed starters because I think some of those guys are pretty good. But they do hit the lefties. They've always hit lefties well. They cremate them, but they keep throwing lefty starters against them, which is okay if it's Ishida and Imanaga, I guess. But okay. Moving on.
All right. So the Bay Stars have been really good. In fact, that battle for the playoff spot is going to be, I'm assuming the Carp win, the lead title, is going to be fun to watch. They took 2 out of 3 against the Tigers at Koshien to take over sole possession of second place for just a short time. And obviously, that was a big series. I thought Joe Whelan pitched really, really, really well. I was hoping to talk to him yesterday but at Tokyo Dome, but I had to leave, which is the reason I was calling Jim to interrupt his interview. I had to leave. But I think they're doing better than I expected, obviously, with the rotation. And that's the big thing for the Bay Stars for me, is they look really good on the mound. But so do the Tigers. Yesterday, Randy Messenger pitched really well. And then yesterday it was Takumi Akiyama pitched really well for the Tigers. Of course, you know, pitching against the Dragons, it's like pitching, you know, it's not a top team batting lineup, lineup that you're going after all the time, it doesn't seem. So, you know, they look really good in that respect. They got some really good pitching performances. I think they lost one of the games 1-0 against the Bay Stars. And that was a Tsutsugo home run they lost on, and that was the only run of the game. It was just a great game, really well-played game. And just unfortunate that you end up having to lose the game. And this kid, this rookie Taiki Ono for the Tigers, I really like him. I don't know why he's unable to win games. Sometimes he pitches well. Sometimes he makes a couple of mistakes in one inning, and that gets him behind, and then he ends up going out of the game behind, and then they're losing, and the bats never wake up. I like the pickup of Jason Rogers, too, for them. It looks like he's going to be useful. But, of course, we've seen this. Guys come in midseason, and they're really they start out well because teams don't know their weaknesses yet. So this is actually their preseason when teams actually just throw whatever they can or try to keep them off balance or just, you know, they just stick with their game instead of trying to attack the batter's weaknesses. And after a while, they figure out what the weakness is, and they attack that more often. But it looks like he's pretty useful. He's a really strong guy. You see, he hit a home run to center field the other day, just flipped the bat out there and got a home run to center. Mm-hmm. It was pretty impressive. So I like both of these teams. It's hard to figure. I can't see which one is going to finish in second place. I sometimes one day or one week, you'll see the Bay Stars have a really good stretch, and they look like they're the team, and then the Tigers turn it around and they look like the team that's going to finish in second place. And I think that's real important. Obviously, they're going to have to play each other in the playoffs if the Giants don't break through and get that final playoff spot. So it's a matter of home field advantage and playing those games at home. Hmm. But they're going to be...
Yeah, right. And it's a big difference between, you know, if the Bay Stars are third place, you know, last year, and 40% of the fans and 60% of the noise at Tokyo Dome was created by people wearing blue. Mm. That wouldn't happen at Koshien.
No.
So third place is a lot more important. Second place is a little more important this year.
And I think it's a big deal because of the ballpark. The ballpark factors. I think Koshien, being the way it plays, and Yokohama Stadium, the way it plays, obviously it's not an advantage for either team because they can both take the ball out of the park, but it's just going to be different. It's a different approach, I think. It might even be an advantage for the Bay Stars to play in a park where, you know, pop fly won't go out.
Perhaps.
All right, so making a four-seam transition, there are a couple notes. Now, one of the notes I wanted to talk about was the solo home run record for one season. And Jim and I, we have been taking turns at trying to figure out how to go about this. And I did ask one of the reporters at the Yomiuri, and he said there is a database at the office where we can go and look it up. But we'd have to look it up year by year. And I guess by... And it's about having the time to do it. It seems like it would take about an hour. By our best
guess, it takes an hour, but it's not the time. It's the carpal tunnel syndrome that using that database requires. And tell me, I've got it. I know I've got the routine down for dealing with the database, but learning a new routine is not something I want to do with my, you know, push on my fingers at this stage of my life.
All right. So our best guesstimates, you know, I figure it has to be somebody who has hit about 50 home runs in a season. And those guys would include Sadaharu Oh, Tuffy Rhodes, Alex Cabrera, Katsuya, Nomura, Coco Ballantyne, of course, and somebody else I'm forgetting, probably. So I'm thinking it's one of those guys.
I think 40 is probably about the limit. I think we had this discussion before, which means there's about 30 guys.
Yeah, you know, I said 50 because Alex Guerrero of the Dragons already has 20 solo home runs, and I don't think somebody who hit 40 would hit half. But obviously, we've got to look before we can make assumptions. So, you got to look year by year. You got to look player by player. It's really an hour.
Yeah,
that's an
hour is optimistic.
It's optimistic, exactly. That's if you know where you're going and you know who to look for. So, but at some point we will try to look it up. The more solo home runs Alex Guerrero hits, the better, because then someone whose job it is to look these things up will look this up for us. So, anybody see it in a especially NPB Reddit? If anybody sees it in a story, please make sure to retweet it or tweet it to us. All right, and there was a trade this past week where Luis Cruz went from the Giants to the Rakuten Eagles, and I just thought, you know, because I tweeted the same week, I tweeted, how long is Yomiuri going to go with Casey McGee at second base? You know, I don't know that this is a good situation for them, and Looks like they've cemented him in there, actually. But they send Cruz away, and I thought this is kind of crazy. The Giants could use a guy who could play good defense at second base and has, you know, somewhat of a bat. He hasn't been great in NPB, but he's better than Takayuki Terauchi. So that's I don't know. Anyway, so it's a good pickup for the Eagles. I thought it was a great trade for them, and it was just for cash, so it's not like they had to give much up. And
I have to mention this, that they call it, it always kills me, they call it a trade and they're not trading anything except money, so it's a sale. Now normally they don't have them in major leagues anymore. They used to be very common in the major leagues until the 1960s. The thing is, it's very rare in Japan for teams to sell valuable players. They usually sell guys who bag of balls, you know, whatever.
Right.
Guys who, you know, I know Tepe Tsuchiya, who went on to have a best nine season with the Rakuten Eagles, was sold for, you know, something. He was basically cast off, and they saved his face by saying they got money for him. But in this case, Luis Cruz is the second player I can remember of any real value was sold in Japanese baseball without a player coming back in return. And do you remember the other one also involved the Giants?
I do and I don't. It would take me 2 minutes to
Makoto Kosaka. So when Tsuyoshi Nishioka took over as the shortstop, he in 2005, he took over. He was the second baseman, and then after the 2000, the Marines won in 2005 with him as their second baseman. They moved him to short. During the middle of that season, they moved him to short permanently, and they sold Kosaka for, I believe, $1 million to the Giants.
Okay.
And so I'll bet they got some good cash for Luis Cruz as well. But he was a perfect fit for the Eagles because they were without their shortstop and their second. Pen baseman, so it's a shame he can't play both positions at once.
Right, but I think he's a good fit up there, and he certainly appreciates the opportunity to play. Like I said, Mogi is supposed to be back, and actually the guy Takumi Miyoshi, who played a lot of short while Mogi has been out, hasn't been that bad defensively. He hasn't really done a lot with the bat, but and Mogi's such a dynamic offensive player. I think they're more than his glove. They're just great, happy to get his bat back in the lineup if indeed he plays today.
Oh, yeah.
Or soon. So, but I think Cruz can help definitely at second base and be an asset on the team. And I thought it was a good move for them. So, you know, interesting trade for the Giants, though. I really don't know. I really can't fathom what's going on up there. But anyway, let's go to fielding questions. All right, the first one comes from our friend Carl in Osaka. Isn't he Kansai Carl? I don't know. Maybe that's a different guy. Anyway, he says the Japanese language has a great expression called netsuki. And how would you translate that into English? And who among today's pitchers do you think has the most intimidating netsuki in NPB? And he says, Kazuki Yabuta of the Carp, Takahiro Norimoto of the Eagles, Kodai Senga of the Hawks, someone else. And he says, John, please don't nominate Yuki Karakawa of the Marines. I don't know what that means.
I think he was saying that. Don't pick somebody who smiles incessantly.
Yeah. I would say, usually netsuki in Japanese usually just means a look or a stare. But I think in this case, in the baseball parlance, I would call it a glare or an intimidating game face. A game face is what I would really call it.
So who has a game face in Japan?
Yeah,
we'd have to talk about Japanese pitchers. We can't use Randy Messenger because he's a good one.
Yeah, we're just going to stick with Japanese players. And like I said, it's a game face or the intimidation factor on the mound. And I just don't think Japanese pitchers pitch that way. I really haven't seen them. But there's a couple guys who have...
Norimoto, I think, is a candidate.
I think
Norimoto is a candidate.
He does have that kind of a glare, but it's not intimidating. He's clean-shaven. You know, he's kind of a cute baby face looking guy. He just doesn't have it. Even if he tried, he doesn't have it. I can see that. There's a guy, Katsuki Matsuyoshi of the Dragons has an intense glare. I would probably go with him. And then the other guy The other guy for me is Hideaki Wakui, because his face never changes.
He's got a sour expression. I think for somebody who generally smiles a lot and is also a baby face, I think Otani's got a pretty...
Yeah, he was one of the guys I thought of at first. And then again, he's a clean-shaven, baby-faced guy.
He can do it, though. He looks pretty intense when he's pitching.
Yeah, but he still looks like after the game he's going to go to his mom and say, can we go out for ice cream?
Hashtag high heat.
That's mean.
But it's true. That's what he looks like.
Okay, I'm gonna drop back in the Wayback Machine. You know, uh-oh. I was thinking that. Okay. This is not about the pitchers. Are we done with the pitchers?
Well, no, but yeah. Go ahead.
Continue with the pitchers.
No. Go ahead.
Go ahead. No. Go. And I was thinking. You have to maybe edit this back. I was thinking. You know, with Luis Cruz, it just took me a minute to find it. Who was the last Golden Glove winning second baseman who doesn't play for the Eagles now
in the Pacific League? Tsuyoshi.
Yeah, the answer is no.
Nishioka.
No, Yuichi Honda. So Luis Cruz and Kazuya Fujita won every Golden Glove since 2012. And then that year, Gold Glovers included the new Japan manager, Atsunori Inaba, Hiroyasu Tanaka, Shinya Miyamoto. Wow. Way back. I was thinking about that when they got Cruz is like, what did they got this thing about Golden Gloves? Tanishige won a Golden Glove the last time one of these guys didn't win.
All right.
Wow. Okay. Anyway, right, so moving on.
Back to the guys with the Minsky. So, there was one other guy, but he's in the States now, and that's Masahiro Tanaka for me.
You won a Golden Glove that year, too.
Get over there. I don't think Japanese guys try to intimidate with the looks and glares and all that stuff, because a lot of these guys, even like Takahiro Norimoto, if you just see him, I think, Carl, you're probably taller than he is. He's not a big guy. And so that stuff just doesn't work. I don't think. I think you can intimidate with the pitches that you throw. But the two guys I mentioned are probably currently the guys I would think other Japanese players might say, oh, this guy has an intimidating glare.
Okay. I mean, I'm sort of with John. It's really not part of the Japanese game. So, you know, they get you out, you know, send you back to the dugout and we'll move on to the next guy. Right. Foreigners, yeah. A lot of foreigners, yeah. But Japanese guys, no.
Okay. All right, the next question is from Coaster Freak, and he enjoyed the question last week about the interesting interviews among Japanese players. So he wanted to put a twist on the question, and he says, I've heard mixed reviews on Okawari-kun being a vague speaker unless you get the right question. Is there any word on how the 11 Japanese managers are at interviews? Hashtag high heat. So, yeah, the thing about Okawari-kun, Takeya Nakamura of the Lions, is he's kind of a Shaquille O'Neal kind of answer. You know, he'll give a little bit of knowledge, but not a lot. He doesn't get into long sentences and complicated things. He's, you know, how are you doing today? I feel good. And then, what do you guys have to do to win the game today? And he says, score runs. You know, I mean, it's very, I mean, sometimes the questions are bad.
Well, my favorite thing. Noel, I'll tell you what, if you ask him a bad question, he's one of the guys who will give you a, what are you asking that question for in the hero interview?
Right.
You know, if you say like, oh, you look like you really hit that one well. And he said, do you think so? I don't think so.
Right. Well, yeah.
He'll say.
These guys basically at their office, of their place of business, get asked the same questions over and over and over about the quality of their work.
Yeah, but you have to know. Yeah, but you have to know on the hero interview when they say, how was the mood in the dugout? So you have to, the answer is not, How should I know? I was in the batter's box.
Right.
The answer is, oh, it was positive and bright and cheerful, and we weren't giving up.
Right. So in terms of
but Nakamura. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, Nakamura is, yeah, he's straight shooter. So in terms of the manager, I think the guys who are easy to talk to, in my experience, and I haven't talked to a lot of the Japanese managers, to be honest, in the past few years, but Hideki Kuriyama of the Fighters is really approachable. Really nice guy. He used to work in TV. After his playing days, he worked as a analyst on TV, and so he understands the role of the media, and he's very friendly toward the media, and sometimes you'll hear him snap at reporters with questions because of the questions they ask, but I think it's because they feel comfortable enough to ask some of these questions that he snaps at them. You know, what are you asking that for? Or, you know, I'm not going to tell you that, or that's a crazy question, he'll come back and say. But for me, Shigekazu Mori of the Dragons, I talked to when he was a pitching coach. And so we have a rapport. I have a rapport with them. It's no problem when I see them, and I don't see them that often because they don't win. He's always nice and takes time to talk to me. And so is the previous Dragons manager, the player manager, Motonobu Tanishige, was really nice, and I had talked to him before on numerous occasions, so it was easy to talk to him. And those two guys for me are the guys who are easy to talk to. Jim?
I guess maybe I'll start with the guys I haven't talked to. Kuriyama, for some reason, it's like I always have questions for him. But we haven't had a chance to talk. The guy I talk to generally all the time, or he'll come and talk to me, is Masataka Nashida.
Yep.
Of the Eagles. Really easy. Who else? I haven't talked to Kanemoto. Ogata is very good after his first year, in which he got a reputation as disliking reporters. Mm-hmm. I think it had to do with the team playing badly. Let's see.
Yeah, I haven't talked to
Mitsuru Manaka.
I haven't talked
is really
to
easy to talk to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have not talked to Kanemoto either. So I would like to, because I think he's different as a manager than he was as a player. He was really unapproachable as a player. And I found it really hard to try to strike up any conversation with him. In fact, the PR people made it hard for you to strike up a conversation with Kanemoto. And then another guy who's easy to talk to is Yoshinobu Takahashi of the Giants.
Yeah.
And I won't say it's probably because he's not doing anything. I didn't say that.
No, you didn't say that, and it's not because he doesn't have anything to say either. So. Easy to talk to. Stomito has always been easy to talk to.
Really? I find him a little bit unapproachable. He just has this look. You talk about the Metsuki.
He has the look.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, he has the look. More so this year than usual. But no, he's a very nice guy. The look's for show. Okay. I haven't talked to either of the Lions guys, but Watanabe Hisanobu, their predecessor, was very accessible. So.
And I know you know Kimiyasu Kudo very well at SoftBank.
I
know he's very approachable, very easy to talk to.
Yeah, he's another guy who used to have that look as a player, the leave me alone look. And as soon as you walked up to him and say hi, he'd tell you his life story.
Right. I saw him at the All-Star game. I said, I talked to you once before with Big Jim, and we were at Cebu Dome, and you might remember the conversation. We were talking in the mirror room one day, and this was the year after he got out of baseball. And and we were talking. I think we were talking about training methods in the visitors dugout in the visitors mirror room at Cebu Dome. And he was talking about routines and stuff like that, and Tommy John surgery and all that stuff. So yeah, very easy to talk to. But in terms of number one on the list, number one on the list for you of all these guys would be who?
Nashida, Masataka Nashida.
Okay. Yeah, I think for me it's Mori for me because I've talked to him when he was a coach and that's just personable. I think Yoshinobu is really easy.
I think a lot of that is. I mean, I've been talking to Nashita since 2001 when he was in his second year managing the Buffaloes. So it's maybe even before that, maybe his first one when he finished last, I don't remember. But, you know, a lot of it's just rapport. My wife would tell you it's a Hisanobu Watanabe because one day he came up to us in a department store.
Right.
Started chatting with us. So I know. Okay.
All right. All right, guys. Thank you very much for the questions. We know that we have one more here question that we can't get to because I have to fly off to work, so we'll get to it next week. But anyone else who has a question, send it to yakyujohn@gmail.com. Hit us up on Twitter at JBWPodcast with the hashtag HighHeat, or send us a note on the Facebook page. Look for us on iTunes. We will talk to you next week. Enjoy your baseball.
See you at the ballpark, guys.